This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you suffer from headaches, there's probably a few phrases you hate to hear, like, big deal, it's only a headache, or it's because you're too neurotic or compulsive, you just bring it on yourself. My guest, Dr. Fred Cheftel, is director and co-founder of the New England Headache Treatment Program at Greenwich Hospital in Stamford, Connecticut. He's also the national president of the American Council on Headache Education, which goes by the acronym ACHE. He's going to share some of the latest medical information on the cause and treatment of headache. This is also covered in his 1990 book, Headache Relief. His group, ACHE, has just put out a new resource book called Migraine, The Complete Guide. Dr. Cheftel hates the expression, it's only a headache. He'd like everyone to have more respect for the suffering headaches often cause.
I think that there are a lot of myths about headache, and I think it's important that people understand when we're talking about the kinds of problems that we'll be discussing today, that migraine, for example, is not just another word for headache. It is not just another headache. It is a debilitating disorder, really, of the central nervous system. And I think there are a lot of people out there who have your garden variety tension headaches or tension type headaches, who think that these other sufferers who really suffer with incapacitating pain are weak or neurotic or simply don't have the kind of tolerance for pain, just take two aspirin, come to work, and make the movie, etc.
Give us a sense of what people go through when they have migraines.
Well, generally, there are two broad types of migraine. Most people are familiar with what we used to call classical migraine or migraine with aura. Now, that represents maybe 10 to 15% of all sufferers with migraine. Those are the folks who start off with some dramatic symptoms such as visual changes. They may see flashing lights. They may see zigzag lines. They may lose part of their vision. They may have what we call field defects and not be able to see off to the periphery. They may have other symptoms involving funny feelings in their arms or legs. And that may last for a half hour to an hour, not more, and that is then followed by the headache. Now, the headache phase, which is common to both people with classical migraine and what we used to call common migraine, now called migraine without aura, usually starts as a dull ache, generally is throbbing in quality and is one-sided, and over a period of hours builds up to a point where the pain becomes incapacitating. Usually there is a degree of nausea and sometimes vomiting with these headaches, and the sensitivity to light and sound is so profound that some people cannot even look at the digital display on a clock radio because of what it does to their heads. I remember one little girl who talked about her light sensitivity to her mother by saying, "Mommy, the sunshine is in my head."
So do most people who suffer with migraines have to basically stop work, stop doing anything when they get an attack?
Well, I would say that most people who suffer from migraine really may have more moderate attacks where they're able to push through the day, though their productivity is much decreased. I mean, they may be at work, but they're there physically, and the amount of productivity is much reduced. The kinds of patients that we may see in our office are clearly those who are totally debilitated and incapacitated, who cannot function at all. But the majority of patients with migraine will suffer some degree of debilitation. And in fact, most people with migraine do not know that they have it. There has been a large-scale epidemiological study that was done fairly recently, which clearly showed that 60% of all women who suffer from migraine have never been diagnosed as having it, and 70% of men. Therefore, the majority of people with migraine believe they have something else, usually involved in self-care with over-the-counter medication or what I like to call off-the-shelf medication.
How much do we know about the cause of migraines?
Well, we've learned a lot more about the cause of migraines. You know, starting at the very beginning in the earliest recorded writings about headache, of course, we believed that headache was due to demonic possession. Over the years, that's been modified, thankfully, and we've had a number of different theories of migraine, many of which have involved changes in blood vessel activity. Nowadays, what's beginning to become clear is that migraine is indeed a disorder of the brain, of the central nervous system. It represents a cascade of complicated and complex neurological events, which involve changes in biochemistry. A lot of work has been done recently on the role of serotonin, a key chemical messenger or neurotransmitter in the brain. And the final common pathway involves changes in blood vessel activity on the surface of the coverings of the brain. I think it's really important that your listeners understand that migraine is indeed a biologically based disorder, just as valid as hypertension or angina or ulcer or any other disorder. And that biological basis is now being clarified.
Well, now that the biological basis is being clarified, is there a better sense of what kind of medical treatment to use?
Well, yes, there is. I think that especially in the last decade, there's been a lot of research. Most recently, the newest kid on the block, so to speak, is a medication which is known as sumatriptan, which is the brand name Imitrex, which is available now in the United States by a self-administered superficial injection. This drug was developed in the United Kingdom based on what our current understanding of migraine was involved in terms of the kinds of receptors that were found on blood vessels. And this medication was developed to specifically affect those receptors and works quite well. There are other mediators in the brain that are being investigated right now and will pave the way for better pharmacological therapy, ultimately better preventive therapy. And in fact, we also know that migraine is clearly a genetic disorder. 70% to 90% of people with migraine have a first-degree relative with it. This summer in France, French researchers presented a paper, I'm sorry, past summer, August of 1993, presented a paper where they are beginning to localize the gene for migraine, or rather they found the chromosome, so that as we understand more about the genetics of the disorder, ultimately, like a lot of other medical disorders, as we're able to affect and manipulate genetic material, the disease will ultimately fall.
How much do you prescribe things that will help either ease the discomfort or take a person's mind off of the pain, such as biofeedback or meditation, breathing exercises? I don't know.
Well, an awful lot. I mean, the treatment of migraine should not be exclusively based on pharmacological therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we position this is by saying, look, migraine is a biological disorder. Picture it as a stick of dynamite with a fuse. Then there are a variety of factors which you can look at as matches which can light this fuse. Now, here are some of the triggers that we believe are operant in migraine. Hormones in women is an important factor. We know that before puberty, the prevalence of migraine is greater in boys than girls. As soon as menstruation becomes a factor, it goes up 2.5 or 3 to 1. We know that a lot of women will have some of their more severe headaches around their periods. We know they may get worse on oral contraceptives. We know that they generally tend to do better during the last two trimesters of their pregnancy. They may do a little worse around menopause and a little better after menopause. So hormones is the reason why the frequency of migraine is higher in women than men. It's not based on neuroses, dependency, or the other kinds of things that they've been accused of. Diet is an important factor. There are a variety of foods that we know can trigger migraine. The most commonly mentioned food trigger, if you can call it a food, for migraine is alcohol, particularly red wine and beer. There are a number of foods which we ask our migraine patients to eliminate for at least a month. They include alcohol, freshly baked bread products, which contain a lot of yeast or something called tyramine in them. We ask them to avoid nitrites and nitrates, which are contained in processed foods. We ask them to avoid MSG. And we also have found that NutraSweet or aspartame, an artificial sweetener, can be a trigger in up to 50% of patients with migraine. So we want them to look at their diet. We want them to have a reasonable diet. Another factor which can be involved in triggering migraine are changes of any type. For example, changes of seasons, changes in weather, storm fronts moving in, altitudes, changes in sleep schedule, skipping meals. So these are factors that we review with patients and help them to make some changes in their lifestyle. And certainly last but not least is the role of stress and psychological factors. And what's important to understand is this. If you do not have the biology for migraine, no matter what you are like as a person, type A, type Q, type E, uptight, not uptight, relaxed, etc., you don't get migraine. But if the biology is present, certainly one's behavior can affect this disorder.
Can regular headaches worsen and become migraines?
Yes. Many people who have migraine may also have tension headache at time as well. In fact, many people that we will see have something called chronic daily headache, and these poor people suffer from headaches on an almost constant or daily basis, usually mild to moderate in nature, going on throughout the entire day, and then superimposed on that, they may have episodes of migraine as well. Now, an important point I want to make here in this, if I can, is to say that many of these people of chronic daily headache are overusing over-the-counter medications. There's a phenomenon which is known as analgesic rebound, and in fact, we now understand that for people who are taking pain medication on a regular, if not daily, basis, they will absolutely make themselves worse, and they will not be able to respond to the usual kinds of techniques that are involved in treating headache.
So this is if you take aspirin or ibuprofen or acetaminophen?
Exactly.
All of those?
Exactly. And we also include, though, there are prescription products, any of the pain medications.
Mm-hmm. So why do these medications make it worse if you take them regularly?
Well, we know that when people are taking these medications on a regular basis, they can affect mechanisms in the brain adversely. There's nothing wrong with taking these medications on an occasional basis, but for people who are taking these medications four or more times per week, they run the risk of this phenomenon of rebound, where the medication has its effect, begins to wear off, and over time pain comes back and more medication is required. The reason that this happens in the majority of people with migraine, and the majority of them do have migraine, is that they become so concerned about any little headache becoming their major debilitating attack that they start to medicate very, very early. In fact, some of them will take medication the night before to make sure that they don't have a headache the next day. And the proof is in the pudding, Terry. When we take these people off of their medication, 50% or more will respond with 50% decrease in their headaches within a month. And within 3 months, 80% to 50% improved.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Fred Schaftel, and he's the director and founder of the New England Headache Treatment Program. He's also the president of the American Council on Headache Education, which is also called AACE. Dr. Schaftel, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Fine.
This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Fred Schaftel. We're talking about headaches. He's the director and founder of the New England Headache Treatment Program. What causes the basic tension headache?
Well, again, there are two thoughts on tension headaches. See, When we're looking at pain and headache in particular, we have to look at both the brain, and we call that those activities central mechanisms, and they have to do with biochemical changes in the brain. And then we look at changes that may occur outside the brain, for example, in muscles. In people with tension-type headache, they may have both a mechanism that is occurring in the brain involving changes in pain chemistry, and they also may have excessive tightness of muscles around their head and neck and shoulders. So both mechanisms may be involved. But I must say that there is a significant percentage of people who complain of the kind of pain that we know is involved in tension-type headache, who, when we examine them and even measure muscle activity, do not show themselves to have high levels of muscle activity.
Mm-hmm. There are some people who get headaches on the weekend, on mm-hmm. a Saturday or on the first day of a vacation or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fairly common phenomenon that is kind of difficult to explain. After all, that's when you're supposed to be relaxing, enjoying yourself, and rid of the tension that would presumably cause a headache.
That's exactly right. And so, therefore, it really has nothing to do really with tension. Again, weekend headaches, for example, let's look at weekend headaches. Weekend headaches occur basically in two people, who tend to have migraine. And again, as I said earlier, migraine is much more likely to occur during letdown periods. See, when we're under stress and when we're kind of focused in an intense way, we secrete what we might call stress chemicals like adrenaline and steroids. And when we begin to relax, these stress chemicals begin to let down. This may have the potential of actually triggering migraine in predisposed people. There's another phenomenon that's important to look at related to weekend headaches, and that is the use of caffeine. If people are using caffeine regularly during the week in somewhat excessive amounts, they may get up later on the weekends. They will therefore drink their caffeine-containing beverage later, and that can lead to a caffeine withdrawal headache. Which is easily taken care of when the person takes in caffeine. So the solution is either to get up at the same time, get your caffeine fix, or to begin to decrease and taper the caffeine that you're using during the week.
Now, you mentioned that the adrenaline and other hormones that course through your system as you push to meet those deadlines or get the job done during the week, they're not there on the weekend, and their absence might bring on a headache. Do we become addicted to our own hormones?
Well, I guess in that sense, you can say yes. If you tend to be somebody that, basically functions in a very, intense and focused way, then certainly those chemicals are up there and people may thrive on them. And then if they are able to relax on the weekend, they then may have a problem. But the answer is certainly not to keep up that frenetic pace of activity, because it's just going to wear you down. There are a lot of people who have type A characteristics out there, and when they're younger, they can get away with it. But as they get older, they will become more prone to fatigue and a variety of medical problems, and ultimately potentially can burn themselves out.
So what's your suggestion to prevent those?
My suggestion is to take a look at your level of intensity. Start to be more aware of things that you're doing without realizing it. For example, we have people do something that one can call a body scan. We ask them to look for signs of tension, scrunching up muscles in their forehead, clenching their teeth, clenching their jaws, haunching their shoulders, driving their cars with their fists clenched on the wheel. One of my colleagues often suggests to his type A that they try driving in the right lane. That's a very good exercise for type A people to do, is to do that and maybe put on the radio and learn to relax a little bit and work on that time urgency, that competitiveness. I mean, these are not bad traits. I'm not at all trying to suggest that we're dealing with negative traits, but people sometimes do not know how to turn it off. You see this all the time. I see people who not only work at work, but they work at play. I see people on tennis courts and golf courses who are supposed to be out there relaxing, and that looks like the farthest thing from their minds.
Now, I know there are certain foods that are triggers for migraines, and I'm wondering if there are foods, or alcohol, for instance, that could just trigger a much more low-grade headache.
Less likely to.
What about beer or wine? I know a lot of people who complain that they'll get a headache after one or two glasses of wine, especially if it's later at night.
That is more likely, again, to be more migraine, even though it may be mild to moderate, than it would be to be tension-type headache. In fact, Terry, beer or wine or alcohol in somebody with a tension-type headache may actually be helpful, because it'll help them to relax, and alcohol may relax those muscles I was talking about earlier. But people who have a glass of wine or beer and have a headache, the likelihood is greater that they have migraine. Now, of course, everybody who may drink excessively from time to time may have what most people have from time to time, and that's a hangover headache. And anybody who's had one of those has an idea of what migraine can be like.
You know, I have to say, some of the things that you're telling us might be scaring some of our listeners into thinking that what they thought was just an ordinary run-of-the-mill stress headache is actually a mild migraine. To me, that's a frightening thought, because migraines, I don't know, they sound like such hell, and it's such a more major problem than an ordinary run-of-the-mill headache. Should we be scared if we think that, from the way you're describing it, maybe it's a migraine?
No. I mean, even if it is a migraine and people are getting away with living with it, as long as it's not interfering in any major way with their functioning, their activity, their quality of life, if they can take over-the-counter medication from time to time and that does the trick, that's fine. It certainly is nothing to be frightened of, but for those folks who do have the more debilitating varieties, yeah, I mean, it does affect the quality of life, and they certainly should be in seeking out some treatment.
There's a third kind of headache that we haven't talked about. That's the cluster headache. What's the cluster headache?
Cluster headache is a monster. It is a headache that is more common in men than women. The pain of cluster headache is always one-sided. It usually involves the eye and the temple. It is not as much a throbbing pain as it is a boring pain. Probably the most vivid description of cluster that I've heard is being similar to a red-hot poker being driven into the eye with immense force into the brain. The eye on the same side of the headache will close somewhat, the lid which will drop. There will be some tearing. The eye will become red. The nostril becomes stuffed and runs. Now, these attacks are shorter than migraine. They may last, for example, 30 minutes to an hour, but they may occur several times a day and almost classically will awaken the person 1 to 2 hours after they go to sleep at night. It may occur for cycles of 6 to 8 weeks in the person's life, never again, occur once a year, every few years. And for a very small percentage of unfortunate people, there are 10% of people who have what we call chronic cluster headache. The pain is so severe that, as opposed to the migraine sufferer who retreats to a dark, quiet room and tries to sleep, cluster patient cannot sit still. They're standing up, they're pacing, they're driving their fist into their eye. It's a very, very dramatic headache. And of patients that I've seen who have had cluster, who have also had migraine, who have had gallbladder disease or kidney stones or labor, when you ask them to look at those pains, they will clearly state that cluster is the worst pain they ever experienced in their lives.
Well, that sounds pretty horrible.
They've been called suicide headaches, too, because certainly if people thought for a moment it would not end, it would be a very reasonable position to end their life.
I think a lot of people assume there's no point in going to a doctor for a headache.
Well, that's absolutely wrong. If you decide that you have to learn to live with these things, then you are really sacrificing the quality of your own life. And you do not have to wait until you're debilitated, till you're overusing medication. If you're having headaches, let's say you have a migraine that's either taking you out or decreasing your productivity, let's say once a month. Well, that's 12 days out of your year. I mean, if you're prepared to be ill for 12 days out of the year, that's fine. You know, that's your choice. But there are so many new treatments, medications, non-medication therapies that are available, so much more that we've learned about headache, that I want the take-home message on this interview to be something for that don't learn to live with it. Seek out appropriate help. There are people now all over the country that have taken up headache as a specialty, who are well-versed in diagnosing and treating these disorders. If you are not getting very far with your doctor, or you find that your doctor is not sympathetic, or you cannot communicate with your doctor, or your doctor doesn't listen, there are other doctors who will. And resources such as the American Council for Headache Education can give you names of people within your area who would be interested in working with you.
Doctor, what do you do when you have a headache?
When I get a headache, I generally will see what's around my clinic and make a choice. I do it haphazardly the way other people do. I can take any of the over-the-counter medication, or occasionally if I have a bad headache, there's a very mild prescription medication called Midrin, which I've used from time to time, and that's very helpful.
But you'll choose from among the three basic types of over-the-counter painkillers?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Terry.
Dr. Fred Schaftel directs the New England Headache Treatment Program at Greenwich Hospital in Stamford, Connecticut. He's also the president of AACE, the American Council on Headache Education. His 1990 book is called Headache Relief, and his group AACE has just put out a new resource book called Migraine, The Complete Guide. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.